for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. And if the clerk will please call the roll.
Hamburg.
Here.
Asparis.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Mosley.
Here.
Foy.
Here.
Widmer.
Here.
Wilson.
Here.
All eyes? Oh, all eyes. Everyone is present, sir.
All right. Thank you very much. I should have received a copy of the minutes of our last meeting. We could please have a motion to approve those minutes.
Mr. President, I'll move that the minutes of last meeting be approved.
Thank you very much. Mr. Larson moves.
I'll second.
Second, Mrs. Foy.
Asparis?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Mosley?
Yes.
Foy?
Yes.
Widmer?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Hanward?
Yes.
Now, all eyes, motion passes.
Very good, thank you. Next on our agenda is public comment. No one submitted the form to ask to speak for public comment at our meeting this week. So we will then move on in our agenda to our standing committee reports. Each member of council is the chairman of a committee on council. And so we will begin with the Parks and Recreation Committee, which is, has a lot of activity going on right now. That's led by Mr. Hanward. Good evening, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Parks and Rec Committee actually met earlier tonight, and we discussed a large amount of projects that are going on this year, including some painting, some bridges, basketball courts, tennis courts, and also some of the events that we have coming up, this Thursday being one of those, with a park cleanup day on Earth Day, and also the Community Day slash kickball tournament in August. The biggest talking point today was the 4th of July celebration, including the parade, the carnival, the softball tournaments, and, of course, the world-renowned fireworks display. So that pretty much concluded our discussion, and if anyone has questions, please feel free to reach out to me.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Any questions or comments for Mr. Hanford? I know one point that I felt was stressed from that meeting was that this not being done in rebellion of any governor's guidelines or anything like that. Everything will be done in accordance with those. So in case anybody wondered, are we allowed to do this or not or whatever, yeah, everything is being done in accordance with any public health orders that are out there. And so what we really need is just an attitude of cooperation from everyone in order to make that event a success. Thanks very much, Mr. Hanward. And then we'll move on to our Utilities Committee. Mrs. Foy.
Good evening, Mr. President. The Utilities Committee has not met, so I have no report tonight, but just want to extend a big thank you to the Distribution Department for getting out at about 2 a.m. a couple weeks ago out in Burton City due to a power outage, and they had most customers up and running by 4 a.m. and the rest by 9 a.m. So it's things like that that are the reason they received the Reliability Award this year. So I will let the Utilities Director touch on that in his report this evening, but kudos to that team.
All right, thank you very much. Then our Ordinance and Personnel Committee. Good evening, Mr. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ordinance and Personnel has not met. However, I would like to schedule an Ordinance and Personnel meeting so that we may take a closer look at the upcoming contract negotiations with the United City Workers and the Police Union. Those negotiations take place on a three-year cycle. They both take place in the same year. And while I wouldn't characterize it at all as a strategy session or anything like that, what we had hoped after the last set of negotiations is that we set up a system where the where City Council is actually just kind of given an overview of how the whole thing proceeds, what is expected from whom, what our role in it will be ultimately, and just kind of a review of how the whole thing takes place. I spoke with Mr. McFerrin late last week and made sure that his schedule is clear, that he could come in and give us that overview. And I would propose that May 3rd, before the regular council meeting, 6:45 p.m., just as we met with the Parks and Rec Committee tonight, if that would suit everyone well, I think that would be timely.
Very good. I just had a quick question. I had hoped to be able to follow up on this today and wasn't able to. Is that a meeting that is going to be public then? Or I didn't know, you know.
It'll be a council committee meeting. And again, because it's really just an overview of the process, I don't think that there's anything that we would risk disclosing or anything of that nature. We just want to give council, the full council, the idea of how the whole ball of wax works.
Gotcha. Yeah, very good. Sometimes, you know, there's a discussion there that we go into a closed session to discuss, you know, personnel matters or those kinds of things. That's why I was like, wasn't quite sure what the content would be. You clarified that very well for us. We're talking about the process of how this goes. So I think that'll be valuable for everybody. So very good. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Then we'll move on then to our Transportation Committee. Good evening, Mr. Mosley.
Good evening, Mr. President. Transportation Committee has not met, therefore I have no report.
All right. Very good. Thank you. And our Health and Safety Committee. Mr. Asperis, good evening.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. President. Health and Safety has not met, and I have no report for tonight either, sir.
All right. Thank you. Our Planning Committee is led by Mrs. Whitmer. Good evening.
Thank you, Mr. President. Planning Committee has not met, so I have no report.
All right. Very good. Thank you. And our Finance Committee, Mr. Wilson. Good evening, sir.
Hello, Mr. President. Finance Committee has not met, so I have no report.
All right. Thank you. We have no special committee reports from our agenda this evening, so we move on to administrative reports, and we begin, as always, with Mayor Hanford.
Good evening, sir. President, I appreciate that. And I'm going to just mention two items tonight. One would be, even though the weather is going to get chilly and colder this week, grass is growing. I think Mr. Mosley will attest to that. And I've noticed driving around town, most people have done really a good job of that, but we have quite a few that I've seen that haven't been touched yet. And as they get to be 6, 8, 10 inches tall, when they do get mowed, they become quite a mess anyway. So just to encourage homeowners, landlords, renters, make sure people know whose job it is to mow. If it's the landlord and they're supposed to mow, make sure they do that. If it's the renter that's supposed to mow, then those people need to know that too. And also, as we ask every year, not to blow the grass out in the street. It all ends up on the catch basins, and sometimes when we have lots of rain in the summer and those get clogged up, that's a good part of the reason right there. So again, if you have to mow that direction because that's the way you mow every time, there's nothing wrong with doing that if you sweep it up afterwards or blow it with the blower and pick it up. The other thing I wanted to mention is I was on a Zoom call this morning with Ohio Municipal League, Ken Skerich, who's president of that, and also Republican or Representative Wiggum, and also Senator Roebner. The primary conversation dealt with the tax issue as far as people working from home and where they're going to pay their taxes and so forth. Quite a few points made by different people. There were some other officials, other mayors from other cities on there too, and myself as far as our situation here. I think bottom line is at the end of the conversation, I think everybody understands it's much more complicated than what people think it is as far as the ramifications that can have. My argument is if we change that and let people just pay where they live if they're working from home, that's a bonus for those communities. it's a takeaway for us, people like us in the larger cities. So that's something they're not used to. If anything, I hope as this goes on, and it's by no means decided yet, that they at least can come up with a fair and equitable way to make this work so that it's not a devastation for, as most people mentioned, the larger cities. But I was quick to point out that it's not just large cities. I know we would be in a bad situation. Cities like Bryan, Ohio, that are just about exactly our size, also one of our AMP communities, have a large industry there that would be dealing with the same sort of thing. So it's a concern for a lot of people.
Well, yeah, and very good. And I'm glad that dialogue is taking place. I think another point, too, is while those workers may not be here, all the infrastructure that is necessary to support those businesses still are. And those companies depend upon us to provide those services, to maintain fire protection, police protection. And, of course, we have a locally owned utility that has to maintain that, and water, sewer, all of those services still must be maintained to those facilities. And, of course, those revenues are required in order to do that. So I hope that our legislators will take that into account as well, that our community made those investments in order to bring about that economic development. And we need that revenue to continue in order to be able to support economic growth in our area of the county.
Yeah, that was all brought up. And the other thing about economic development is if that would continue to go the direction that some of them are pushing, there would be far less reason for anybody to ever even try to attract companies, because unless it's manufacturing where they strictly have to be at work to do the job, it won't be as much of a benefit to bring a company in like it is now. So we've talked about all those points over and over.
Very good.
Mr. Howard?
Mr. Mosley.
Do we know which way currently we're teetering? Are we going hard one way? Are we in the middle? I mean, do you have an idea where we're at now? We're dealing with that situation?
Well, Senator Rogner is one of them that was pushing to get it so that they could pay where they live. She's from Hudson, so that would be a great advantage for Hudson, Ohio. But I think she's seeing some points from the other side, too. And again, I don't think it is anywhere near decided yet. So,
all right, thank you.
Yeah, this discussion, Councilman, it's still in committee down at the State House, so there isn't anything formally out. So we need to see some more information coming out of the committees, draft bills, things along that line, other than the generic concepts that are being discussed right now. But we have as the mayor mentioned, OMBA is on top of this, along with our state electric association. So there's a lot of depending on what side of the fence you're on, there's a lot of eyes on this for a lot of good reasons. And as the mayor said, there's just a lot of balance that needs to be looked at, because this is right, wrong, or otherwise, this has been a institutionalized over so many decades that is not easily unwound.
All right, understood. Thank you.
Yep.
Mr. Mayor, I just wanted also to add that you had talked about attracting businesses to a city. Oftentimes, to do that and to incentivize expansion, we offer tax incentives to companies to do that. A lot of those are contingent upon job creation as well. So I would think that if those jobs no longer contributed to the local tax base, that we would probably have to renegotiate even those tax incentives. So it's not a simple equation in that regard either.
Right.
Good points, good discussion. Anybody else? All right, then. Thanks very much, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate that update.
You're welcome.
All right, we'll turn then to our Safety Service Director, Mr. Wheeler. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. President. The Service Department is doing landscaping at the cemetery, and they're getting ready for the snowfall event this week that we hope is just a bluff on behalf of Mother Nature. The police department did get another golf cart inspection today. There are up to four that have been approved to utilize our streets, so they're street-ready golf carts. The chief did ask me to remind anyone, any of our UTV users, that they do have to come in for inspections and before they're able to use it on our city street. So if folks are planning on doing that in the spring, they need to set something up with the department to get approval. That's my report for tonight.
All right. Thank you, sir. Any questions or comments from Mr. Wheeler?
Just one. Mr. Wheeler, did we order enough salt for the snow that's going to happen this week?
Believe it or not, we have about 900 tons of salt available. So if we need to even use anywhere close to that, we're in some real trouble.
All right, very good. That's enough talk of salt. I'm ending that discussion right now. So very good. We'll move on then to our utilities director, Mr. Brenniger. Good evening.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just two brief comments. Ms. Foy mentioned that we had some electric customers out on the 11th of April in the Burton City area. We had roughly 430 customers out due to a large tree that came down and took down an entire span of three-phase wires out on Burkhart Road. So that happened at about 2 o'clock in the morning. We had all except about 150 of those customers back by 4, and we had to balance them back on by 8:30. As you recall, we did have a big weather front that came in on that time, and it was an old tree that didn't like the wind blast from Mother Nature there. But nonetheless, that was really the only damage, and fortunately, early enough in the morning that it really didn't cause, hopefully, too much disruption to our customers. The only other item I had is we received word from the United Way that they are in position to offer the utility another grant. We have accepted that grant. This time it is for $1,900, and this grant works under the same principles as the first $5,000 grant that they awarded us and the utilities matched to help out our residential and our commercial customers that were impacted by COVID. So we have dispensed of that initial grant already. Just recently received this $1,900 grant from them, which we will be matching again, and we will be making those opportunities available to some of our customers that have exhibited some hardships COVID related. We had no problems awarding those grants to several customers, residential and commercial customers, over the first round of COVID. So we appreciate the United Way's thoughts on that, and the board was very much appreciative and wanted to continue on with the good works that we did earlier in this year to give our customers a little bit of a break there. That's all that I have tonight. I do have the utilities annual report towards the end of this meeting, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that anybody might have.
Very good. Any questions for Mr. Brenniger? All right, then we'll move on to our finance director. Oh, I'm sorry. Our finance director is excused this evening. So then we'll go to our law director, Mrs. Kirkbride. Good evening.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have no report other than to mention that we had our charter review committee meeting last Monday, and we are working toward putting together a list of items that we are asking the committee to review. And looking forward to, I believe we have a meeting at the end of April coming up for the committee to continue discussion and consideration of items. Those need to be submitted by April, I believe, oh, I'm sorry, August, I believe it's 4th for the November election. So we have a couple of more meetings at least to move forward. Other than that, I have no report.
Very good. Thank you. And just to piggyback on Mrs. Kirkbride's report, I think we had a very successful first meeting for our Charter Review Committee, and we surfaced a number of ideas and issues that they would like to explore further. As Mrs. Kirkbride mentioned, she's been putting together some draft language for some of those areas, and we're continuing to research some other proposals. So anticipate probably two more meetings, maybe three, but we're going to work hard to see if we can't get this wrapped up by the end of May. So that's what we're going to work towards, and we'll see if we can get there or not. Every once in a while, I do provide an update. As people ask, hey, how long do you think we'll continue to meet virtually here by Zoom? And my position has been, of course, I'm always open to discussion, but if we have to wear masks, and, you know, if we have to find a way to, you know, socially distance there within the setting of our, of the Orville, you know, council chambers there, I would prefer that we just continue to meet by Zoom, just because I think the practicalities of having to wear masks and of having to do that spreading out with the layout that we have there, I find, in my opinion, to be impractical, especially for recording that meeting, you know, on our local television and stuff. It just doesn't work very well to do that, but if we can find solutions around that, I'm all for that. But that's continues to be my position, although we continue the dialogue here as the months continue to roll by. So anyway, that's my update for this evening. No old business is on our agenda for this evening, so we can move straight to new business.
Mr. President?
Yes, Mr. Wilson.
One quick question just in regards to the charter review. Can you characterize about how many points of interest they're looking to change or how extensive?
Yeah, I would say that most of the proposed changes, and Mrs. Kirkbride might have it up in front of her, I think there are seven or eight. Most of them I would characterize as minor, just bringing language and concepts up to date, providing some clarification on a phrase in the charter, for example. It's one of my favorite that anytime the mayor is out of town, the council president is the acting mayor. Let's provide some clarification there. So there is a proposal in there look at the composition of council and whether or not partisanship should remain as a concept as part of council. So there's some consideration and investigation there. But other than that, I would say that, the charter is serving us very, very well. I have not received any complaints about the charter, and so I don't view most of what they're talking about to be anything other than what I would call minor changes. So, any other questions?
I have just one quick question, Mr. President. Yeah. When it comes time and those items are on the ballot, are they lumped together as one big change, or are they separated and each voted on separately?
That's a good question. I've seen it both ways, where every individual item is voted on separately, and then I guess Worcester did it where they were kind of lumped together. So, Mrs. Kirkbride, I don't know if you've got clarification on that yet. I know that's been a question that we've been trying to chase down.
Yeah, I don't, and I think we may want to consider from a strategy standpoint whether we want to have all of the changes together or whether we want to separate them so that if someone, you know, if a voter has an objection to one, they don't necessarily have to vote against everything. Many of the changes are what I would say immaterial, that they're just cleanup of, you know, we have all male pronouns throughout the charter, for example, so we are going to make it gender neutral. We have some language regarding the residency requirements that are no longer lawful, so we need to remove those. And we also just want to expand how we meet, for example, that we can meet virtually, we don't have to meet in person. So some of those, and publication that expands beyond newspapers. So some of those things are just what I would consider to be common sense changes of things that are obvious. There are some things, as President Vance mentioned relating to partisanship for council, for example, and there was another one that...
there was one we're talking about the requirement that council has to meet in person. If we could use our home rule authority to say, no, if we want to meet virtually, you know, or some other method, that we would have that option if needed. So we're investigating that.
Right. So those are some things that we're looking at. We've gotten feedback from the city administration, and if any of you have any feedback, I'm hoping to get an email completed to the committee in the next couple of days so that they can, we talked about these things verbally. I promised them that I would get them an email in writing so that they would have something in front of them to look at for our next meeting. And so I know President Vance had sent out a message a couple of weeks ago to council and to the administration. So if you have something in the charter that you would like to have us take a look at or the committee consider, please let us know that soon.
All right, any other questions?
Yes, President Vance. I'd just like to also mention that we as council members are allowed to attend that meeting as well. And I thought it was really interesting. First of all, we have some members of that committee that served on the very first Charter Review Committee.
Yeah, 1974 or something, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, several repeat members. And it's just really interesting to see, let's call them ordinary citizens, engage this document that governs everything we do. It's a deep dive in it, and they really have to look at it closely. And I really thank the people that have volunteered to do it. It's a big job, and I'm glad that they're doing it, and it's something to watch. So if you have the opportunity to attend, please do.
Very good. Anyone else? All right, thank you. Mr. Larson, then, we are ready then to move to new business, and I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Resolution 1621, I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
I saw Mr. Wilson's hand, but I need to hear you as well.
Second.
All right, thank you, Mr. Wilson. Seconds.
Larson.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
Foy.
Yes.
Widmer.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
Handwerk.
Yes.
Aspiris.
Yes.
All ayes. Motion passes.
Pretty good. Thank you.
Resolution 1621, a resolution authorizing the Board of Control to advertise for bids and enter into a contract and or contracts for the Ellis Street and Orr Park Culvert Replacement Project in the city of Orrville, Ohio, and declaring an emergency.
All right, very good. We will turn to Mr. Wheeler for a word of explanation.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the project that Councilman Hanwerk had just mentioned in the REC committee. We would like to get moving forward on bidding this project out. Our goal is to complete it over the summer, so as not to disturb the schools, or at least, maybe I should correct that, to at least have a portion done of Ellis Street so that the schools wouldn't be impacted. The engineering is complete. Mr. Lau is going through kind of final review, so I would request, if possible, that we approve this tonight. It has been budgeted in the budget. I believe we went over it a few times now, so hopefully everyone's familiar with it. Dan is on the call on the Zoom tonight as well. If you have any specific questions about the actual work, that's kind of his expertise there. Be glad to answer any questions.
All right, any questions on this from anyone? Hearing none, Mr. Larson, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. As Mr. Wheeler said, this has been budgeted for and discussed many different times. The timeliness of getting it done before school starts is really a motivating force for us. Given that, I move that the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate days be suspended.
Mosley seconds.
Very good. Second, Mr. Mosley.
Mosley.
Yes.
Foy.
Yes.
Widmer.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
Handwerk.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Larson.
Yes.
All ayes. Motion passes.
Thank you.
I move resolution 1621 be adopted as read.
Second.
Second, Mr. Handwerk.
Foy.
Yes.
Widmer.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
Handwerk.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Larson.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
All ayes. Motion passes.
All right. Thank you very much.
Resolution 1721. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Widmer. Thank you.
Widmer.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
Handwerk.
Yes.
Asparis.
Yes.
Larson.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
Foy.
Yes.
All ayes. Motion passes.
Resolution 1721, a resolution authorizing the Board of Control to enter into an agreement and or agreements with OhioCAT to purchase through Sourcewell Cooperative Purchasing 1 2021 Caterpillar 926M wheel loader, which includes a hydraulic quick coupler, 3 cubic yard bucket, lifting boom, and payload scales, and declaring an emergency.
All right, thank you very much. We'll turn then again, I guess, to Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a piece of equipment we are purchasing for the cemetery. As such, the purchase price of the equipment will come out of the cemetery fund. There will be occasions we will obviously use it outside of the cemetery, but the primary use is for the cemetery. This has actually been kind of on our capital radar for the last 2 or 3 years, and we're doing additional research to make sure we got what we wanted. Mr. Emerald's comfortable now that we can move forward, so it's brought before you tonight. Mr. Emerald is on the call as well tonight if you have any questions specifically for him about the purchase. This does not have to be approved tonight.
Any questions for Mr. Emerald or discussion?
Mr. President, I have a question.
Yes, Mr. Handwerk.
Mr. Emerald, it doesn't sound like this is an emergency. Is this a replacement, or is this something that's somewhat urgent to complete the job that the cemetery has to complete? I don't know if I can hear anybody.
I'm not sure he's on here.
Yeah, he had been on. I think we lost him just a few minutes ago.
maybe Mr. Wheeler, give us some insight. Just curious if it was an emergency, Mr. Wheeler, or if it was something.
This is actually a new piece of equipment. We've been wanting to get one of these for a while now. I would say it's not urgent in the fact that, you know, we've lived without it this long. We can live without it another couple weeks. You know, like anything else, the sooner we get approval, the sooner we can move forward and get it ordered.
I'm sure it would come in handy.
Yes, sir.
Pretty good. What's counsel's pleasure?
Ryan just texted and said his Wi-Fi cut off, and so as a result, he lost the call.
There's the downside to these Zoom meetings, isn't it? Yeah. Mr. Larson, you were saying something.
Thank you. Yes, this is an item that has been planned and budgeted for over the past several years. It's coming out of the cemetery fund. The money's there and ready to spend. We know how difficult it's been to get pieces of equipment on order and in our hands, actually doing what we intend it to do. So, because of that, I don't see any reason to delay. I would move that the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate days be suspended.
Very good.
Second.
Second. Mr. Espiro, thank you.
Wilson.
Yes.
Handwerk.
Yes.
Espiro.
Yes.
Morrison.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
Foy.
Yes.
Widmer.
Yes.
All ayes. Motion passes.
All right. Thank you.
I move Resolution 1721 be adopted as read.
Second.
Second. Mr. Handwerk. Thank you.
Handwerk.
Yes.
Espiro.
Yes.
Lorson.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
Foy.
Yes.
Widmer.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
All ayes. Motion passes.
All right. Thank you. Up next on our agenda is our annual report on utilities given by our utilities director, Mr. Prediger. Mr. Prediger, are you going to drive your report, or would you like for me to share it?
Yes,
I can.
Okay, yeah, if you want to go ahead and give me screen share, I'll go ahead and drive the bus.
Last time I did this, it didn't work. It seems like we've been about 50-50 on this, so
okay.
There's that.
Okay.
And, okay, I have it set up that says all participants can share. Any luck on that?
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
See it okay?
Yeah, it's great. Thank you.
Excellent. It happens. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. President and members of council. I'm Jeff Prediger, utility director for the city of Orrville, and I'd like to present the Orrville Utilities annual report for 2020. Just a couple of notes before we begin. This is a little bit more of an abbreviated version to the shows that we have provided in the past, just trying to be a little more respectful of everybody's time. I did include a lot of supplemental slides and information that's at the end of this slideshow that should have been mailed out to you there. So if you have any questions along the way, feel free to ask. Also, this report will also be on the utilities website. This is just a makeup of our utility board, if you weren't aware of who our five-member board is. But just as a reminder, Michelle Abel is our president this year. She's been president for the past couple of years, and Mr. Combs, Mr. Miller, Mr. Farland, and Mr. Korfman have been on the board for a little while. Our board members serve five-year terms. Just for some background and information, our board is appointed by our member. The board approves the utilities operations. They provide independent oversight and control of the utilities. And a reminder that the utilities are all nonprofit, and according to Ms. Strimlin, we do operate under their own enterprise fund. So we have rates that are set up that are strictly for those individual utilities. There isn't any a financial cross-sharing that takes place, and there is no formal subsidizing that takes place between the utilities and the city, other than there is a ordinance that allows for the city to receive free electric for the buildings and street lighting as long as it remains economically feasible. Just a couple of highlights for the year. You can kind of see what those were. Certainly COVID, the last item on the bullet list, was the main item for us. But one of the things that we did do, it wasn't a no-brainer, but we did keep our electric rates stabilized through the entire duration of COVID. And as you can see, we've been doing this since 2016. There were several times during the year would have seen some increases, and the board was able to stave those off. And it's our hope that we can kind of continue that going into 2022. And again, COVID really doesn't need to be explained too much more. We've all lived through it, but it was nothing short of some outstanding work done by this administration, our supervisors and employees. And I can say that we were able to sustain, just like the fire department, police department, and other city departments, a continuity of service had no problems for us. Our water and wastewater utilities, I'll start with them. There are some more background slides that are further on in this report, and I'll refer to them a little bit more in detail a little bit later on. But just a very high-level view of where the revenues just from the customers come from, just to give you a breakdown on who contributes to the bulk of the funding for those two utilities. And you can kind of see the water department's up on top. It's pretty much shared by our residential and our commercial customers. We really only have two rate groups in there other than the interdepartment. And that interdepartment is basically the power plant and the wastewater treatment plant, our two internal utilities. And today that's just a small piece of the pie, that green pit portion. Prior to the EPA limitations, restrictions on the power plant, used to occupy close to 30% of that water utility's revenues over the course of the year. Likewise, on the wastewater side, you can kind of see, too, those two customer groups pretty much make up the bulk of the revenues. You can see how the customer usages are, and those really haven't varied much from year to year. Our top customers, this lineup really doesn't change too much, but if you're wondering who the big water users and wastewater customers are, I don't think anybody on this list will be surprised at the makeup of that. But in case you're wondering, that's how our customers stack up. This view is showing where our rates are relative to the state of Ohio, and you can see in the case of the water on the left, our rates are pretty close to where the state average is. Again, I remind you that we were well below state average prior to the changes at the power plant that took that major customer out, and a major revenue provider to that, which kept our water rates low for many decades. Still have a comfortable gap from a sewer, a wastewater perspective, and just to kind of show you where those are at. Our customer bills are a lot lower than this on an annual basis. These rates are based on the state's annual water and sewer usage across the state, and our customers use less water and wastewater than the state average. But to keep things on a apples-to-apples comparison, that's how we stack up there. The power plant, again, there's more information contained on some detailed slides, but this is a view of how our sales have been over the past 20 years. And you can see that top line, which is our total retail sales. You can see how closely in the blue line down below it tracks to our industrial customers. And you'll see in the next slide why that is. Our industries in our community pretty much set the pace for our usage.
the balance of our commercial and retail customers. You can kind of see where they end up at. And certainly here in 2020, everything dipped down a little bit, and we can thank COVID for that. This is just a breakout of the energy sources that provide the electrons for our customers, and I like to show this slide because there's a lot of evolution to this. Prior to 2013, the plant provided all of the energy for our customers except for a small percentage that was purchased on the market while we had the plant down doing scheduled maintenance. 2015 was when all of our projects that we invested in starting back in 2012 came into play, and you can kind of see how the year ended up for us in 2020. It looks pretty similar to what the makeup looked like in 2019, other than the power plant operated a few more hours than it did in 2019, and we'll talk about that a little more. Our total renewables, energy coming from our hydro, wind, and solar projects last year was about 16%. 2021, that number should be probably a little closer to 20%. This is a breakout, further breakout of just our retail customers and where that energy is sold. And you can see roughly half of the energy is consumed by our residential and our commercial customers, and then the bulk of the rest is our industrial group. And you can see of that industrial portion, which is a 44%, Quality Castings is our largest customer, followed by Smucker's. Last year, those proportions were a little different. Quality's usage was down this year due to COVID and orders and things along that line, whereas Smucker's sales were up mainly in the food product industry. They had a pretty good year in that respect. We do have about 20% of our customers are outside city limits. Almost 90% of our customers are residential. So when you look at these retail sales breakout, most of our customers are residential, but they only account for roughly a quarter of our sales. This is the lineup of our industrial customers. Again, a chart that we've seen year to year. Again, a further breakout of who some of our top players are, starting off with Quality Castings, Smucker, Smith Dairy, and Beckert, and then the group kind of narrows down from there. But again, there they represent a little bit less than half of the total sales that we are. So that's why those curves and that retail slide follows our industrial folks, and that's what makes us puts us in a position to be able to do what we do and to have this community weather through some of these storms, whether it's the COVID experience that we are pulling ourselves out of, or various recessions we've had over the years. The diversity of these businesses have enabled us to, as a community and as a city, come out on the other end in a lot better shape than a lot of our other municipal partners that we deal with. A lot of people kind of ask, where does the energy come from? I don't see the power plant operating as often as it does, and that's true. This is the operational chart from last year, and the blue bars just show you what percentage of energy came from the power plant over the course of the year, and you can see that there wasn't that much. And that difference is made up from the various projects that we own and operate along with other AMP member communities, as well as purchases that we make from the wholesale market. This chart is looks a little complicated, but it is the amount of energy that we use on a day-to-day basis over the course of the year. And you can see we use this for planning purposes. You can see the part that's in the solid blue is energy that's used all the time, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And when we get into these those other bands that move up vertically, that's pretty much the time periods on Monday through Friday. That's when most businesses and industries are in business, and then those spaces in between are generally the weekends. The higher spikes that you see in July, August are naturally periods of time when there's higher usage. And the types of projects that we invest in and that we need to provide all these needs on an instantaneous basis are based on whether or not that energy is needed 7 days a week, 5 days a week, or just a few hours over the course of the year. So this is one of the charts that we use that help us manage that that portfolio of energy projects that we have. These are our CO2 emissions that we have generated over the course of the past 10 years. CO2 is a precursor to greenhouse gas, a topic that's on the plates of many agencies and minds these days. And it just kind of shows you how the plan has evolved over the years. Certainly the large decrease in 2017 was the primary driver as a result of the EPA limitations that was on the plant. And as I mentioned, in 2020, we saw a little bit of an uptick in the amount of emissions, and mainly because we operated the plant a few more weeks over the peaking period this year compared to last year. You've heard us talk a number of times, and this was a subject that we spoke to our elected officials in Washington about, is bulk of our energy costs now are come from our projects, and those fees that we pay the transmission company keep going up every year. Last year we paid close to $7 million in transmission fees. However, when the plant operates during these peak periods, which we don't know where they are until we get to the end of the year, so we bring that plant up several times over the course of the cold of winter and the dead of summer, based on calls from the transmission system operator. But if the plant is operating during those highest peaks over the years, they provide a credit to us. And last year, that credit was about $6.2 million to help offset these transmission fees that would normally be directly passed on to our customers. We have no control over those, but when the plant is able to operate at its full capacity, the transmission company provides us credit because we are not relying on the grid to flow in energy into our community, and that's usually at a time of peak demands. There's usually other constraints on the grid, so they provide some credits to help alleviate that demand on their system, prevent the possibility of isolated blackouts and things along that line. This is how those transmission fees that are in the red and how those credits have evolved over the past 20 years. And you can kind of see where we started off at in the beginning, and you know, where we're projected to be out in the latter part of 2020-2025 time period. And what we are seeing over the course of years, we're seeing the fees go up and we're seeing the credits go down. And these are, again, something that we spend a lot of time talking with our legislators and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in Washington, D.C. about bringing some a little bit of fairness into this, and trying to get a little bit more rationale for why these costs and charges really have to be made.
and the fact that we really don't have any say over whether or not they benefit our customers or not, but we do have the privilege of paying for them. So we continue to keep our eyes on that, and that, as you can see, will be a subject matter that we will be dealing with for years to come. I'd like to also put up this chart to kind of put things into perspective. A lot of people ask us why we got into the projects, when we did, what was going on at the time, and how did the cost of those projects compare to today versus when we got into them. And it was back in this early part of the 2000 time frame where the power plant's costs were below market. The power plant was running all the time. We were selling additional power into the market to generate additional revenues to help keep our rates down, pay for fuel cost increases, things along that line, pay for capital expenditures without having to raise rates. And there was a lot of also environmental regulations going on at the time, driving prices up. You know, we were also being looking at the age of the plant. We were looking at these costs continuing going up. So we started making decisions. AMP membership started making some investments in a number of different generation resources. We looked at diversifying those resources because they all had some pros and cons attached to them. Some of them economic, a lot of them environmental. So we started looking at them for a number of different reasons, and the prices kept on going up and up and up. And then they finally culminated in the 2008-2009 time frame, and the recession hit. And we go forward a few more years, and we bring all the shale gas that's been developed in Ohio and our surrounding states, and we see the gas prices start going down, and the electric market pretty much has followed the natural gas prices for the past 20 years. And we fast forward into 2020, and we see where the market is at today, relative to where the power plant operates at today, which is out of the market. And you see over the course of years when we buy more power from the power market, we have been locking in power prices out into the future to take advantage of lower purchase prices, which again translates into our ability to keep our rates as stable as they have been for a little bit over 5 years. But it's just one of those interesting turn of events. This dotted line was when we were in the thick of things. This is where all the forecasters were expecting energy to be. This is how the whole world was trending for that much here. So people decided saying, you know, we can't be captive. We weren't one of those in buying energy from other people. We had the plant on our side, but we also knew we had some life extension issues that we needed to look long for our customers. But you know, what a difference a recession makes in the grand scheme of things. But it does allow us a little bit of a look back as to why we got into doing what we did. During that time, we invested in four hydro plants. Three of them are shown up here. They're located down along the Ohio River. We had an investment in the Fremont Natural Gas Plant up in Fremont, Ohio, that we purchased from First Energy that was not completed. That plant went commercial, and we completed construction on that and brought that into our portfolio in 2012. The Prairie State Energy campus is one of the last clean coal, state-of-the-art coal plants that went online back in 2012. Our solar projects, which is the most recent projects that we entered into, we have two sites, one out by the wastewater treatment plant and the other one in the second industrial park.
And then the Blue Creek Wind Project, this is a reminder, we do not own these wind units. We just have a purchase power agreement for the energy coming from these sites. And that contract actually expires in 2022, about the middle of the year. And we're looking at seeing whether or not it makes sense to renew that contract. Right now, wind really isn't attractive going forward right now. It's lost a lot of federal incentives and a lot of tax credits that have kept pricing low to us. And solar has kind of taken over the lead. We'll take a look at that. But there's a strong possibility that we may be dropping wind out of our energy portfolio here in another year or so. This is a chart just kind of gives you an idea on how often those projects operate. Now this along with some of the other charts we saw before are also some tools we use to determine what makes the most sense for us. And you know, everybody likes solar and we like wind from an environmental perspective, but as you can see, these projects, the scale is 1 to 100%, and 100% means these generating projects operate 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Well, the wind doesn't blow 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, nor does the sunshine. So there are physical limitations to these green or carbon neutral projects out there. So we can love all the solar and all the wind we want. We just can't get it all the time. Whereas places like the power plant, when we were operating before the EPA limitations, our Prairie State facility, these units, like nuclear plants, are designed to operate 80, 90, 100% of the time, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. They provide that energy that is demanded from our customers all the time. And then our Fremont plant and our hydro plants are, the hydro is really dependent on the water levels in the river. And the Fremont plant is really not designed, most gas plants are not designed to run 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. They are designed to operate during those Monday through Friday periods, those heat of the summer, dead of the winter periods. But this is these are some other factors we have to keep in mind when we invest in projects and what makes the best fit for us. Our annual report that has a little bit more information on it is on our website. I'm just going to pull up some high-level financials on there. Ms. Stremlin did an excellent job on her financial report at the prior city council meeting. I just refer you back to that report. She understands what's going on in our utilities. She's very connected, very engaged. We work together real well. And again, she did an excellent job getting into the details, but I won't go back and rehash all of that other than to say on a high level perspective, this is the electric, this is the wastewater, that our utilities are in good shape, just echoing what she said. Our electric and wastewater departments are debt free. We will be free of our taxable debt in the water utility in 2023. We just have a small balance on a zero interest loan to pay off, and then our water utility will be totally debt free, probably about 24-25. Our payroll for the year was down a little bit. But some of that reduction was due to offsets and some COVID funding we received from the CARES Fund to help pay for some labor expenses when we had people off on administrative leave. Our total spending was down about 17%. You know, we put a lot of projects on hold. Some purchases on hold. Our total receipts were down about $6 million. We'll talk about those here a little bit more in detail, but really the takeaway from this is the utilities are in good shape despite all the challenges we had due to COVID, which is a segue into what I wanted to talk about a little bit. We spent some time at the utility board last week getting into some of the weeds on the COVID impact, and I just wanted to start off by saying what the mayor has said in his annual report and Mr. Wheeler on his. I mean, not to pat everybody on the back, but for folks, our customers that were expecting a fire service, EMS service, utility services to be a gimme during COVID, so they could deal with the other important COVID reported COVID needs is a far understatement. Our employees, our supervisors really stepped up and made all this happen. We locked down with the rest of the world on March 13th, and we really didn't bring back most of our workforces until the first week of July. So we were able to operate and continue those continuity of services without skipping a beat during this whole period. This just kind of gives you an idea on where electric sales were at since the revenues are the highest from this utility. It gives a little bit of history and just to give you some kind of impact on the hit from a usage perspective that we saw on the sales on electricity. These are the revenues that I said were down for electric utility. The dotted line is 2020. You can see it kind of tracked a little bit with prior years, but that period in March, April, May, June was a tough time for our customers and really everybody to begin with. Things picked up in August. If you remember, August was a little hot, and it stayed hot long. August kind of kept us out of going a little red in the revenue department. Businesses started coming back in the fall, started trending back up, but not quite where we were in prior years. I mentioned that our industrial sales pretty much drive our business around, and you can kind of see here again in the red dotted line what the impact of COVID was to us relative to the past couple years. But they trended along similar lines, other than these dips in the second and third quarter, and we started seeing some pickup towards the end of the year. I want to skip over that slide. Our utility cost, for example, kind of like, where's the power come when the power plant's not operating? But roughly 65% of our cost of providing energy to our customers is wrapped up in purchase power. The balance is distribution cost, administrative and finance department. But you can kind of see over the years how that has worked out. Our expenses have been dropping off since 2017. That's when the reductions operating restrictions at the power plant started kicking in. This chart just gives a little better breakdown of the different energy sources we have, how much energy. The blue bars represent how much energy in total came from the various projects, and then the amounts in black are the actual energy cost from each one of these projects. So we get down to kind of seeing what our hydros don't operate very much, but they do come at a pretty high cost. Most of that is construction cost. After that debt drops off, we'll see those power prices come down in the neighborhood of where the NYPA hydro costs are at. This is a federal hydro project that the city receives some allocation for, And today, those hydro projects are fully paid off, and the cost of those hydro projects is just O&M right now. So once the debt is paid off, we'll see our hydro project costs start coming down. A lot of our energy comes from market purchases. If you recall from the pie, we purchase energy from the City Group. That's actually a bank, believe it or not, that sells virtual electrons. And then the our other market purchases, that is some of the cheapest energy that we can buy. And as a result of the markets where that's at, that's allowed us to keep our rates down where they have been for several years now. At the end of the day, this is really the chart that really only matters, is where are your rates at relative to the incumbent utilities, which is AEP and First Energy around us. And we're here in the green hashtag section, and you can see where we stack up against IOUs. And these are investor-owned utilities across the United States, co-ops across the United States is the other yellowish sort of color. And then First Energy is the red, and AEP are the two utilities that surround Orrville utilities. And you can see where we stack up on the residential side. It's a little harder to compare our local investor utilities in the commercial and industrial arenas, because they get in and they write all sorts of special contracts. You can't even figure it out on if you go to their rate sheets on there. But needless to say that on a national basis, we still stack up real good. And I think if we would have something that we could be safe in comparing apples to apples to First Energy and AEP, our commercial and industrial rates are very competitive relative to them. But this is really what we're tasked to do, is to keep this differential down here. And that right now today, it represents roughly about a 20% delta between our rates and if our customers that are in our surrounding areas. I just had a couple of global slides to kind of wrap things up a little bit here, but this kind of gives you an idea where the retirements have been and the additions are planned for in the time period of 2014-2025. You can see that a lot of retirements and planned retirements are in the coal industry, some in the natural gas. But if you look at where the additions are, they are in wind, they are in solar. Oops. This is where America is sitting at on her energy pie. This has changed over the years, 10, 15 years or so. This big blue piece used to be coal, and that used to be over 50%. So just the shift in a lot of dynamics has moved the United States' energy sources around quite a bit from a few decades ago. And as I mentioned there, wind and solar are picking up larger slices of the pie. It is expected that solar will quadruple by 2030. This year, nuclear dropped off quite a bit. There was a record number of retirements. Five reactors came out of the game that will not be coming back, and that took a chunk out of the nuclear piece. The balance of that fleet will be around for many, a couple more decades, just like coal. There's just a portion of this energy that we haven't been able to come up with a gap to be able to be provided on a 24/7 basis. Something else to be just kind of keep in mind going forward. It's estimated that I mentioned that in wind units inside kind of landlocked area really don't have a lot of capability of generating on a 24-hour basis. But if you have wind located on the eastern or western shores, they estimated that there is enough wind offshore that could supply 90% of our energy, and they are trying to target that by 2050. So there is an abundance of wind out there if you can, one, get it out in the ocean and put it out in the ocean at a reasonable cost, and put it out in the ocean where people don't mind looking at it out in the ocean. Just to wrap some things up from an economic development part perspective, as you can imagine, 2020 wasn't an exciting year from an investment perspective, although we saw a little bit of growth, but nothing to even update our running total on. But the good news is we only lost two commercial accounts through all of this. We did have two commercial accounts open and one industrial account open. So, despite everything that went on, we fared real well. Wayne County fared, again, from a growth perspective. Wayne County still continues to be one of the lowest counties in the state as far as unemployment level goes. That's good from that perspective, but one of the number one comments we hear when we talk with our industrial customers are trying to get people to come work. And that remains a problem in our community as well as Worcester and the bulk of Wayne County, Stark County, Medina County. Low unemployment's good, but if you need people, you are going to struggle with getting getting those folks on board. I'll just kind of wrap up here at the end. Is what's ahead of us? Certainly, with the new administration, climate change is on the front radar on everything that comes out of Washington. I've sent a few emails out to City Council letting you know what's on the radar, but in every branch of government, there is a climate change piece in everything, whether it's Homeland Security, Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Education. There is something that's got a climate piece to it. And certainly those things are things that we have to keep aware of with respect to the continuation of the coal plant. As you're aware, earlier in the year we had struggled a little bit with insuring the plant from some major insurance carriers. That is something that we are certainly very much in tune with, and we'll be kind of tracking that with our new carrier this year and going into next year. But that is a new one that we have not had on our list of potential threats that could mess up some of our long-term plans. Certainly, we talked about some of the increased transmission costs. Again, those being costs that are directly passed on to our customers, and those credits that we receive when we are allowed to operate the plant, those credits keep getting decreased over the years. It isn't helping the situation. The mayor mentioned some discussion on the on our third industrial park and economic development in general, and that is a concern of ours. That we need to keep in mind. We only have one site available. We receive inquiries periodically from folks that are interested in a new property to invest in the site that we have our eyes on right now. Will require an investment of $5 to $6 million. State funding is tight, and the economics on getting that
those monies back if we don't get some sizable relief from the state or the federal government, really calls into the question as to what economic development looks like for our community, especially with respect to payroll taxes. So that whole industrial park has us a little bit on pause right now, even though it's a solid project. It is ranked real well in the in northeastern Ohio, but we continue to take a hard look on the rationale and the long term value of that park going forward. Certainly, from a COVID perspective, we're working with our industrial customers, commercial customers, to help support them in any ways we can. We touch base with our large industrial customers periodically to make sure there's nothing come along that we can't assist them with. We want to, when they recover, we recover, we get ourselves in better position. We're relooking at our rates again. As I mentioned, I'm optimistic that we'll be able to keep our electric rates froze in 2021. We're reevaluating our rate plans for our water and wastewater utilities also. And Ms. Trimlin spoke a little bit about the recent $1.6 million from the federal government under the American Rescue Plan. And as we continue to understand what that can be used for, we'll be working on a good, effective, citywide use of those funds. And that wraps up my report. I do want to end with one thing, and this is a note of expression of sincere thanks to Bob Auten. Bob Auten's our wastewater treatment superintendent, and Todd Fetty, who is our water superintendent. Both of these individuals will be retiring later on this year. And I just wanted to publicly thank Bob and Todd for all their work. Both of these guys have been with us individually for over 30 years. Bob has about 3 years on me, and Todd and I came the same day, and we both have been here for 33 years. So over the course of the next few months, we're going to have about 65 years of experience leave us in two individuals. We've got great people coming in behind them. That's been part of our plan through all of this. But I did again want to, on behalf of the Public Utility Board and certainly my office and my dealings with these two guys over the years, I want to thank them and wish them the best of success in their retirement. I'm jealous. With that, Mr. President, that would conclude the utilities report for 2020. I'd be happy to take any questions, and I'm going to stop my share and see if I come back into screen here. So, yep. Any questions I can ask? Again, you guys, hopefully, I think Gene did mail out the presentation. If you have any questions on that later on, don't hesitate to give me a call or drop me an email. I know there's a lot of stuff in here, and apologize for keeping you so late. Thank you.
Very good. Any questions for Mr. Redeker? All right, very well. Thank you for that report. Do we have any comments for the good of the order this evening?
Mr. President, I do.
Yes, Mr. Morrison.
Similar to the shout-out that Mr. Redeker gave to a retiring employee, I'd like to give a shout-out to Karen Flinner. 30 years ago when I started working for the city, 30-some years ago, I guess, Karen and I shared a room, there at City Hall for almost 15 years. And she's an administrative assistant, but she knows the city's business and zoning codes inside out better than anyone. And she was always on the ball, always prepared, took care of a lot of things behind the scenes that that many people took for granted. And she will absolutely be missed, and I wish her all the best. Her and her daughter Sophie going forward, whatever adventures come their way, I hope they're grand, and good luck, Karen.
Very true, John. Those are great words. It's interesting to me. I often tell people some of the best people you will meet work in government, and especially local government, and especially so in our community, in local government, and in our administration, and just throughout our workforce. And, yet our society has such distrust in government, but I tell you, once you get to know, it's not the government, it's people, and you meet some of these people that are serving us. I think a lot of people have the same sentiments you do, and those are very kind words for you. Anyone else have any comments? Look at the order. Very well. Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn.
Very good. Mr. Larson moves.
I'll second.
Second. Mrs. Whitmer. Thank you.
Asparis.
Yes.
Larson.
Yes.
Mosley.
Yes.
Foy.
Yes.
Whitmer.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
Handwork.
Yes.
All ayes. Motion passes.
Very good. Thank you very much. Our meeting is adjourned. We will reconvene then on Monday, May 3rd, 2 weeks from this evening. And a reminder that the Charter Review Commission will meet next Monday at 7 p.m. If you need a link for that meeting, please contact the council clerk. Thanks very much for being here with us tonight, and have a good evening.
Thanks.
Good night. Bye, guys.